danger is stealing in as relapse hums above the din. It's hard to know if this will be the day.
Hello and welcome to episode 187 of the Thinking Poker Podcast. From Cambridge, Massachusetts, I'm Nate Mavis, and with me from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, is it's Andrew Brokus. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here. I don't know if you and maybe some other people saw on Twitter, I had a bit of an adventure getting up here. It was not the smooth process I thought it was going to be. This time, in the past, I always kind of sweat crossing the border, and once or twice I've had to go through some additional screening or answer some additional questions about what exactly it is I'm doing in Canada, because playing poker, there's not always a sufficient explanation for why you're going to be here for 3 weeks. But this time it was entirely my own fault. Emily and I, as I think I've kind of forget what I've told people about what's going on in my life. We've left our apartment in San Francisco. We're likely to be headed back out there, but at the moment we don't have a place there. We've been visiting our families in the Baltimore area. I've been playing a little bit at Maryland Live. And now the plan for September, or for late August and September, is we're going to drive up the East Coast to see some friends. We're camping with some friends in New York, and then visiting some friends at Dartmouth, which is sort of right at the New Hampshire-Vermont border, relatively close to the border with Canada. And the plan is Emily's going to drop me off at a train station. I'm going to take the train the rest of the way to Montreal, and she's going to drive back to Baltimore. So on August 31st, which is the day before I'm supposed to get on the train, I go to buy the train ticket, which entails you have to put in your passport information when you're buying the ticket, just, I guess, to make sure for exactly what's about to happen to me. Because it's a problem if someone doesn't get into Canada, then, like, I don't know if they turn the whole train around. I can't imagine they turn the whole train around, but they have to do something to, like, send that person back to their point of origin. And it may be that Amtrak ends up having to pay for that. If a person like isn't admitted to Canada, so they I guess are making sure that you have a valid passport, which when I go to enter the expiration date of my passport, I realize it is in fact August 31st, 2016, the very day on which I'm attempting to purchase the ticket, which means it will no longer be valid tomorrow when I go to get on the train and attempt to enter Canada. So I'm kind of trying to figure out what to do, and I started to say it turns out, but really Emily discovered that there is a passport office in a town called St. Albans, Vermont, which is about 3 hours from where we were at the time, and they can do expedited passports. Now, this is also the Thursday before Labor Day weekend, so basically if I don't get a passport in the next, or sorry, that was, I guess, the Wednesday before Labor Day weekend. But if I don't get a passport in the next, like, 48 hours, then, it's not going to happen. There's going to be, like, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Certainly no government stuff is going to be happening for those 3 days. And it's going to be a long time before I'm able to get a passport if I can't get one very quickly. So we ended up driving to Vermont, not even knowing for sure whether this was going to work, whether they're going to be able to get it to me quickly enough or not. But figuring that was our best chance. And it really was amazing how the office was not very busy, but they were like, I didn't see anyone else in there, any other customers. I just like brought them my application and my passport photo and all that. And it took them, I guess it was about 3.5 hours between when I gave them all the info and when they were ready for me to come pick up my passport. So I had a passport like the same day within hours of getting to the station and giving them the stuff. And I was able to go to Montreal after all. But as you can imagine, that was quite the moment of panic when I saw that my passport was expiring the day I was supposed to get on the train.
Yeah. Yeah. Way to rescue yourself there.
But yeah, really, Emily rescued me. I shouldn't take too much of the credit there. She also, had to drive. Like it wasn't really out of my way, because she ended up coming to Montreal with me for a few days, which was nice having you here. But you know, for me, that was like more convenient than getting on the train. Like, this arguably worked out better for me, except for that express in the meantime. It arguably worked out better for me if this happened. But for her, it was like kind of driving straight out of the way, like probably 5 hours out of her way total between going to Vermont and then coming up the rest of the way to Montreal. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully she enjoyed her time here. I think she did. But yeah, it was really, she was far more put out by it than I was.
Yeah. And you are, I trust, enjoying Montreal as always?
Yes, it's been great. Actually, just this morning, I had breakfast with Alex Weldon, our former podcast guest and poker writer, game designer, Alex Weldon, who I met him, I guess, when I was out here last time. So it's the second time that I've met up with him. But always good to see Alex. And I ended up taking today kind of an impromptu day off, which is a little ironic because this is actually, it's Tuesday today, and this will be the biggest buy-in event to date that I was going to play. I did not have any plans of playing like the 100K. But so the Super Tuesday today is a $1,500 no limit event. But I played 14 hours yesterday. There was an event that started at 10 a.m., which was, I don't remember which one that was, but the $200 rebuy started at 10 a.m., so I played that. And then there was the $300 PLO8. How do you not play that? So of course I'm PLO8 at 1 o'clock, and then 4 o'clock there's the six max. So I'm gonna play the six max, and then I ended up just barely whiffing day two of the six max. I did cash it, but so I played like 7.5 hours in the six. So I was playing like 14 hours on Monday, and I already had the plans to have breakfast with Alex on Tuesday, and I was like, you know what? Let's just take Tuesday off. Who cares if it's the biggest event so far? You know what would happen? if Carlos doesn't want to play poker, Carlos doesn't play poker. So that's where I am. I just decided, screw it, I get a day off if I want a day off. So
very good. Very good. Well, that's exciting. I've tried to sweat you a bit, but I've had some software issues on this end. So hopefully you can run real deep and I can sweat you from here through the end of WCoop.
I would like to. I've had a lot of shallow caches. I think I've cashed maybe close to half the events that I've played. Maybe the furthest I got in terms of percentages in the field, I did get in the top 100 of the Sunday warm-up, which actually was the very first, technically it was event two. I guess there was an event that there were like day ones for it leading up to the WCoop, and then day two was like day one of the WCoop in my opinion. So I didn't play that one, but the first event that I played was the $200 six max warm-up, and I did make day two of that. And I won. This is funny. I registered a tournament by accident on Sunday. Thankfully, it was something that was not too unreasonable for me to play anyway. But I was trying to register something else, and I accidentally clicked register on a $80 horse tournament that only runs on Sundays. And it was just as the tournament was starting, so I wasn't able to unregister from it. And I ended up winning it for about $2,000.
Nice.
So that was obviously I ran quite good over the course of the event, but just to have misclicked my way into $2,000 was sort of a bit of run good in its own right. So that's been my biggest triumph of the series so far, has been winning a horse tournament.
Excellent. Nice work. That's
how are things in Nateland?
Things in Nateland are good. Some personal stuff keeping me very, very busy, but also, you know, work is work, and trying to read up on poker a little bit on the side. But a lot of stuff going on that is not interesting to our audience, so I will spare them. But very busy and very fun, and it's just about fall here in Boston, so who doesn't like fall in Boston? Oh, and I went to Cooperstown. That was pretty good. That's recommended. I don't often do touristy things, but if you like baseball, the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, were both things I expected to like and liked even more than I thought I would.
Nice. Yeah, as you know, I'm not a baseball guy, but I know Emily has been there and she liked it. She's a bit more of a baseball fan than I am.
Yeah, it's nice. And I mean, you have to really try to get there. It's in the middle of upstate New York, and as those of you who have been to upstate New York know, there's a lot of expansive empty space between things sometimes. However pretty that expansive empty space is. But yeah, the Baseball Hall of Fame, very nice. I had feared or even expected something a little more like Niagara Falls, where there's this like really nice thing, then just tons of crap being peddled at you from all directions all around it. But Cooperstown was actually quite tasteful throughout and really enjoyable.
Speaking of upstate New York, actually, at the end of that horse tournament, I was heads up with Plattsburgh.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, good. Upstate New York, underrated part of the country, I think. But now I'm back in Boston, and maybe it's time to talk about some hands.
I'm playing the World Championship of Online Poker, which means soon there's going to be new World Championship of Online Poker material on Tournament Poker Edge. That's right, I don't play a lot of online poker, so this is the time of year when I hopefully will make a deep run or two that I can analyze in depth for the members of Tournament Poker Edge. Don't miss out, you can get ahead of the curve by signing up today at tournamentpokeredge.com. And I thought, Nate, just... because I'm always interested in getting your thoughts on Omaha 8 or better, PLO 8 specifically, and it seems like people enjoy the non-hold'em stuff we do here from time to time. I haven't played a lot of non-hold'em stuff. Obviously, there's the horse tournament that I just mentioned, but it's hard to pull like stud hands. You know, Poker Tracker doesn't import those, so it's kind of hard to go back through and find like interesting stud hands, and I think they're hard to talk about on air. So I thought maybe this PLO 8 would be better suited to discussion on air.
Very good. I'm seeing an NL08 hand. Is that the one?
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. So this was NL08. I don't know that I feel like I was not aware of that over the course of the entire tournament.
All right. That's I don't know if you're too embarrassed to leave that in the show or
I really don't remember this being an NL08 tournament.
Man, I need to play some more MLOA tournaments, I think.
Okay, well, we can keep that while discussing this hand. But yeah, I really think I did not know that when I was playing this hand.
It's possible it was an import error. That's something that...
Yeah, we'll go with that.
All right.
I am in the cutoff with 23 big blinds. Right. I have ace, king, 10-4. The ace 10 are spades, the king 4 are clubs. So I have ace 10, king 4 with nut spades and second nut clubs.
It's a good hand.
Yeah. So the action middle position opens to 2.2 big blinds. Middle position, I kind of recognize the screen name. For some reason, like when I saw the screen name, I was like, oh, I think this guy is a pretty accomplished mixed game player, and he did seem pretty good. So there's like a 90% chance, I would say, that this is a pretty capable mixed game player, which is not the norm for this tournament. There are people in this tournament who don't even know whether it's PLO8 or NLO8. But there are also people who don't know how to play either of those games very well. So he opens to 2.2 big blinds from the hijack, and I am in the cutoff. So again, ace, king, 10-4, double suited. You think that's a call or a 3-bet?
So with 23 big blinds, I think the risk to 3-betting is that you really can't fold to a 4-bet unless you 3-bet really small and get 4-bet by an extremely tight range. At the same time, it's not that hard to get aces in this game, and a lot of the aces hands will 4-bet you and be ahead of you. So you need a wide opening range for 3-betting to be good. So that's the reason not to 3-bet, is that at these stacks, you're going to be 3-bet calling almost always, and a fair amount of the time when you 3-bet call, you're going to be behind. The reason to 3-bet is first that you have a great hand. You have ace, king, 10-4, double suited. The obvious reason you have a great hand is that it makes the best hand a lot. The slightly less obvious reason is that you hit a lot of flops. You've got really great floppability with this hand. I mean, sometimes it comes 6-5-4 and you're in bad shape, but other than that, almost any flop you're going to be happy with. when I say almost any, like 8-7-6 is not good either. But you hit a lot of flops very well. So which of those sort of ways of thinking wins out right now? Well, I think if middle position, if the opener is very loose, then I think you should just 3-bet and go from there, because aces won't be enough of his opening range. Also, yeah, your hand is good. You don't really mind taking it down immediately, but this hand's going to play really well. Like, if you 3-bet to 5 or 6 big blinds and he calls, so there are, say, 12 to 13 big blinds in the pot with, 18 big blinds behind, that's going to be a great situation for you. You're really going to print money in that spot. You have position, which matters a lot more in these short stack situations or low SPR situations in PLO8 than it does in Hold'em. You can really use your position, and you've got a hand that allows you to use your position. So that's all great. If he's a little bit on the tighter side, then calling is really good. And if you get players behind you to call, ace king 10-4 double suited, your approach to the hand is going to change. The third nut low draw is not going to be fourth nut low draw, or depending on what's on the board, maybe the second or third nut low draw. That's going to be much less good than it would be in a heads up pot, but you are going to make the nuts, and it's good to make the nuts. So your hand's going to play fine in multi-way pots. Also, if it gets back raised behind you, you can often fold to a 4-bet or really happily call a 3-bet. You'll have position most of the time. Again, your hand's going to play well multi-way. So I would default against a really good player, probably to 3-betting against somebody who might be limping some more of his mediocre hands and raising a little bit tighter. I would probably default to calling. Neither one can be that bad. As described, and I think I see a statistic here where the opener was playing a lot of hands, here I would 3-bet.
Yeah, I think he's only been at the table for 6 hands, but he's played.
Oh, never mind.
I think, given that I did think that I recognized his screen name, and I think there's also just a bit of a, if he's going to be a better post-flop player than I am, maybe like shortening the stacks for post-flop play is a little desirable as well. I think you're right that it seems close, but I feel like I probably should have threw that here. I did not. I called, and the big blind, who I did not have as much of a read on, called as well. And we see the flop. You can't even. I did not do a very good job of sharing this information with you. Okay. We see the flop, which is 8-6-3 with 2 clubs. 8 of hearts, 6 of clubs, 3 of clubs. I am holding ace king 10-4 with the king 4 of clubs, meaning I have the second nut low, ace 4 being my low, ace deuce would be the nuts. I have the second nut low, and I also have the second nut flush draw. The big blind bets half the pot, and middle position calls. Now the action is on me.
I'm sorry. You have the second nut low. You have the second nut low and a nut flush draw. Is that right?
Second nut flush draw. So I have king 4 of clubs. I have ace 4 for the low, and I have king 4 of clubs for the second nut flush draw.
Okay. Yeah. I think you cut out when you said what the flop was.
It's 8-6-3. 8 of hearts. 6 of clubs. 3 of clubs.
8 of hearts. 6 of clubs. 3. So big blind bets. Half the pot, middle position calls half the pot. So you are getting 1, 2, 3, 4 to 1 on a sort of janky draw here. So middle position would have opened a lot of his ace deuce. Big blind would have defended a lot of his ace deuce. So what does big blind have here? Would he bet half the pot with a naked nut low draw? Probably not. But if he had a pair and a nut low draw, then he might.
It would be a made nut low. It wouldn't be a draw.
Would you do it with a made nut low? Maybe not a naked made nut low, although I've certainly seen stranger things. And it's not that hard for him to have some sort of pair or even 2 pair with that. Middle position to call 3.9. So I think middle position would just call this bet with a lot of his nut lows. So I think your ace four is good sometimes, and you'll have a hard time figuring out when it's good. But I think that it's not that hard to get the nut low in this game. You will not have the best low here. A pretty good amount of the time. So what about high? Right now you have no high, and you have a second nut flush draw. So some of the time the flush will come in, but you don't have the nuts in that case. And sometimes when the flush does come in, there are redraws against you or the board has paired. So yeah, I think because you have position, I can see a pretty good argument for taking one off and seeing what happens. I think the turn, the turn may go check checks to you sometimes, so you might be able to see two cards for these four big blinds. That would be nice, but I wouldn't blame you for folding, especially if you think that the Razor is a good player who's not going to be peeling this. Like, if he raised queen, jack something and paired his something, so he's got an overpair. If he paired one of his kickers and he doesn't have much else going on, if he's not going to just throw away these four big blinds by calling that first bet, like if he has to have something, then I think you're going to have a hard time seeing the river, and you're going to be up against the nut low in at least one spot. So I wouldn't blame you for folding. I also wouldn't blame you for peeling one, just because your price is so good and you really do hit a flush sometimes. When the flush hits, the naked nut low may have a hard time continuing, so I'm not sure you're going to be paying off tons of bets all the time when the flush comes in. And I don't think you're going to be throwing in a lot of money into the pot, not knowing whether you're ahead or behind, if you make your flush, as you would be sometimes. But I do think that folding here is fine. I think against one opponent who I think is good and one unknown opponent, I like a fold here. Against sort of standard, pretty weak opponents who I have good control over, I might peel this one, but I think the standard play is to fold.
Yeah, okay, so I did fold, and I feel better about that. It kind of seemed, when I was reviewing this tournament, I was like, oh, that seems like, with the price that I'm getting, like, maybe it is worth peeling. But I know the chasing non-nut draws or non-nut hands in general in multi-way pots is a pretty common mistake in this game, so I'm glad to hear that folding was not a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, so, I mean, let's ask some basic questions. Like, when is it better and worse to chase a second nut draw in PLO8? Because a lot of people have heard the mantra, you know, only draw to the nuts. And one good answer is when the nuts are pretty likely to be out there. So what would somebody need to have the nut draw? That would be the ace of clubs and some other club. Well, you have the king and the four. That blocks some of the clubs. That's a point on the good side. A point on the bad side is that people really like to play aces, and for good reason. You know, the aces are the key cards, and you've seen two people put money into the pot voluntarily. So while there are some times when you have, like, say, a second nut straight draw, and it would take a king, queen exactly or something like that to make the nut straight, even then you have reason to worry, but a little bit less reason to worry than you do now when the combinations of cards that make the nut draw are really commonly played and really likely to be out there and out there given the action. Another question to ask is, do you have much chance to scoop? So, you know, don't draw to the second nuts, but if you have, say, a few scoop cards, that can be really good. Well, here you only have three deuces to get the low if you're behind. You may already be ahead. You may have half the pot. Like, some of the flush cards could be scoop cards for you, but probably not. And if your ace four is good for low or good for half of the low, then it's even more likely that the ace of clubs and some other club, you know, the nut flush draw is out there for high. So I think that... I think the mantra, don't draw to the second nuts in PLO8, certainly don't play one-way hands in PLO8. Those are good, but as always, we want to think about, you know, the actual situation and ask some more questions to figure out how good our hand is. And these peripheral factors are not as bad as they could be, but still pretty bad, and I like your fold.
Yeah, you know, I think it's also worth saying, not that you don't know this, but non-nut lows are a lot more valuable when there's an ace or a deuce on the board, given that ace-deuce is so commonly played. When ace-deuce does make the nut low, especially in a raised pot, it's pretty likely that it's out there versus, if there's an ace on the board, now the chances of someone else having a low, like it's far more likely that 4-3 or something will win for the low with an ace on the board than it is that ace-4 will win for the low with a 3 on the board.
Yep. And especially in a multi-way pot.
Right. The one out that I would have to turn to make the nut high would be the ace of clubs, but that would then counterfeit my low. So again, it's not a scoop card for me. It would lock up half the pot for me, or not lock it up because someone could redraw to a full house. But it would give me the current nuts for one half of the pot, but then it would also counterfeit my low. So that was kind of why I folded here.
Yeah.
So results, the big blind has ace, deuce, 3-7 rainbow. So he did basically have a bare low. He had paired the three, but he didn't have any kind of straight draw or flush draw or anything. And the original raiser had ace, deuce, king, jack with backdoor nut flush, which came in for him. So he also had a bare. I guess he had the low plus a backdoor flush draw on the flop, but he ended up making the backdoor flush draw, so he three-quartered the other player. For what it's worth, they did both more or less have bare lows.
Yeah, I will say that if this is an LO8, then I really like your fold.
Okay, so next hand, this is a blind battle, which is another situation where I'm a lot less familiar, because I think a lot of those kind of maxims about like playing for the nuts and that sort of thing are going to be obviously less true when people's ranges are really wide. I feel much less comfortable in terms of sort of like hand reading and assessing like where a hand sits relative to my range and that kind of thing when ranges are pretty wide. So I'll be curious to get your thoughts on this one as well. This one is against the same opponent, the one who I was saying is a pretty good player who at that point had the previous hand we discussed had just joined the table. I guess this hand actually comes even before the other one that we played. So at this point, I still have 38 big blinds, and the villain in the hand has 34 big blinds. And my suspicion is that he's a pretty experienced mixed game player and is probably playing this game better than I am. So he open raises to 2.38 big blinds, and I am in the big blind holding 10-6-4-3 double suited. So I have 10-6 of clubs and 4-3 of spades. I'm facing like a 2.4x open. I didn't seem very close to me that I would want to defend with this.
Also, there's an ante. So five players posted an ante of 1/8 of a big blind, it looks like. Mm-hmm. So there's an extra 5/8 of a big blind. You have to call an extra 10 or 11/8 of a big blind to play. Yeah, this is a very easy call. I mean, your hand is bad. Don't get me wrong. 10-6-4-3 double suited, you said?
Yep.
Yeah, that's bad, but you have position. And all those non-nut combinations are like all those combinations of bad flushes and bad straights and bad lows and bad two pairs and all that all gets less bad A when you have position and B when you're in a blind battle. If he's raising 2.4x, then I would humbly say that there's a good chance that either A, he's doing something exploitive and counting on you to overfold, or B, he's sort of in hold'em mode and is not a super seasoned PLO8 player. And again, this guy's probably a much better player than I am, but I'm just saying there. I myself don't see a lot of reason to make those really small raises out of position when there are antes in the pot. When I'm up against good competition, unless the big blind's going to really overfold, you're just getting a great price with a hand with some connectivity. It's a trap hand, a garbage hand in a full ring situation, but you are heads up here. You have position. I would definitely play. I would not three bet unless I thought that somebody was going to really overfold to a three bet or overfold later. But easy call.
So I did call, And we see a flop with 4,300 in the pot, 25K in the effective stacks. The flop is 10-7-6, 10 of spades, 7 of clubs, 6 of spades. And I'm holding 10-6-4-3. I have both clubs and spades. So I've flopped a poor flush draw. I have 4-3 of spades, but I do have a flush draw, and I also have a backdoor club draw, which would be 10 high. I've also flopped 2 pair, so 10-7-6, and I have 10-6-4-3. I guess I also have a gut shot with a 5.
All right. So at first I should note that if there are antsies, this is no limit. So it is.
I already knew it was no limit. I was just trying to accept the face saving explanation that maybe it was an import error.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, maybe the importer, you know, made up the antsies too. So that's
added some antsies as well.
Yeah.
The villain bets 2,600 into 4,300. I think folding seems out of the question.
No, folding is no bueno. Good. So why would you raise? Well, one reason to raise would be for value, because you think that your opponent will call with bad hands and that he's more likely to do so now or later, or that you can set up some good situations later by raising now. And that's fine. I think that a villain shows some strength here by betting this flop. I think after he raises preflop and gets called, I'm not sure this is like a pure C bet. Like, it's possible that this is just a no limit monkey, just betting into the wind here, and you know, without much of a clue. But, or, you know, he's tired and he's been playing for 14 hours and he's just c-betting and hoping to take it down. I think when you raise and get called and the flop comes 10-7-6 two-tone, I'm not sure that I would expect an unknown to fold a lot on that flop. So I think he's got something. So you have two pair, a gut shot, a bad flush draw, and the, whatever, sixth nut low, something like that, draw. So that's a whole lot of nothings, except maybe the top two pair. That's pretty good. Sorry, top and bottom pair. That's pretty good. I would, you know, be willing to stand some heat with this hand. I do think if you raise, you run into trouble getting action on your hand. You might get the nut low draw, or maybe the nut low draw with some high potential that you have in pretty bad shape. You might get that hand to play with you, and that would be good. You have a good edge against that hand. However, if you raise and get called, you're going to frequently not know where you are on the turn, and you will also frequently only be getting half the pot. It helps that the nut combination has a 9 in it, and you know, the 8-9 combination is not so easy to have in a raising hand, but it's not impossible to have either. So between the straights and sets and better two pairs and all the better flush draws, straight draws, etc., that he could have, there are a lot of cards that will leave you uncomfortable on the turn. And I would rather be slightly deceptive and see what happens on the turn by calling. I think the best reason to raise the flop is to A, fold out hands that have some equity against you, and B, set up profitable bluffs later. So if it comes, you know, sometimes the turn will come a 4. And so if you raise, sometimes you can get a fold from a better hand or a better draw. It's a little bit harder to see how that's going to happen here, but sometimes it will come a 4 and a better low draw will fold. Sometimes it'll come a flush card and a bad flush will fold. That may seem very implausible, but especially if he like got counterfeited for low or something, you won't automatically, you're still deep enough that you can put pressure on some of these hands. You know, less plausibly, it could come like 7 deuce or something, and a naked 7 could fold. That's pretty unlikely, but you do generate some fold equity by raising on the flop. As I've just demonstrated by having a hard time coming up with these scenarios, your hand is good enough where I think that's not going to happen very often. If you had bottom two pair, I think raising, you know, for all these reasons combined would be a better play. Here, I would rather just call.
Yeah, I kind of felt like, I mean, to the way, like, heuristic that I sort of used is just that my hand is not really nutty. In other words, like, it's not currently that nutty, and it also doesn't have a lot of potential to turn into nutty hands. So I'm just likely to end up with more bluff catchery take to showdown kind of hands than I am, you know, big pot hands. There's not a lot of scenarios where I end up with a big pot hand, and that was my reason for not trying to grow the pot on the flop if I had to boil it down.
Yeah, I mean, that's a useful heuristic. I would caution a little bit against that because on the flop, like, once you call this bet, let's say you haven't decided whether to raise yet, you know, you call that 6.5 big blinds on the flop, you know, almost 5.5 big blinds in the pot before the flop, that's 12 big blinds, and you only have 3, 6, 28 behind. So already, like, you could get, if you raised the pot, there would only be like, what, a half pot raise behind ish.
Yeah, I guess. It's a pretty shallow.
Yeah, it would be like a min. It would be close to a min three bet all in. So, if you can get hands with equity to fold, that's really good. And yes, you don't have the nuts, but it is a blind battle. You know, your four three low will win sometimes. I mean, imagine you're playing hold'em like 150 big blinds deep and you call a raise with 9-7 of clubs and you flop a bad flush draw and a 7. Like, you know, you wouldn't avoid putting a lot of money in the pot with a hand just because it's not nutty enough, right? It's I mean, yeah, you might play it any number of ways, but if you flopped a bad top pair and a bad flush draw, then yeah, you wouldn't worry too much, and you would be wondering what hands you could get to fold and what hands you could get to call. I do think that your hand's going to play better if you inflate the pot a little bit. One final reason to call is that you can fold out half the pot on the river sometimes, like saving the river bet to be bet is pretty good. So yeah, I think the less nutty your hand is, the less good your hand is. But here you have so much going on and you're in a blind battle. So I wouldn't worry too much about the nuttiness of your hand as a reason not to raise.
Okay, that's fair. So I did just call. And we see the turn. There's 9,500 in the pot now and 23K or so in my opponent's stack. So just a little over 2-to-1 stack to pot ratio now. And the turn is the 9 of spades, making the board 10-9-7-6 with 3 spades. I have 10-6-4-3 with the 4-3 of spades. So I have a very low flush. I do also have 2 pairs, so I have some ways of boating up on the river. And I still just have my 3-4 for a meager low draw. The opponent checks to me. Is this a check or a bet, you think?
That's interesting. I can see a good reason. I mean, we are playing NL08, right? Like, I can see a good reason. I can see a good case for shoving here, which is that you can fold out the nut low. Right. And you can also, I mean, you've got a 4-3 low and a flush, so you're probably not beaten both ways. Like, you could fold out, you can fold out a lot of straights, I think. Like, what's he going to do with ace 10-8-5, right? He's going to fold. He should fold, I think. Although you scoop that hand, so maybe you don't want that hand to fold. Right, so I mean, that might need
to go off of the ace-5 low draw or something.
Yeah. That has some value. But, I mean, I guess ace, is he going to fold ace-4? I think he'll fold ace-4 sometimes. I think he has ace-4 sometimes. I think a fold and has ace-3 sometimes. Yeah, I think this might be a shove. I think this might be a shove. If you don't shove, what happens if you bet? If you bet, I guess you can get called by a straight. That's good. You can get called. You can get some pot odds calls from some you know, two pair type hands with worse lows or with no lows. There aren't that many worse lows than yours, but that's worth something. So yeah, there are some reasons to bet. There are also some reasons to check. It's deceptive. You don't want to get raised. If you get raised, then you could be getting scooped. That said, it's a blind battle. You're going to have a hard time being convinced to fold this hand. I think I would shove. I think I would shove this hand.
Yeah, I very well may have chosen the worst option, which was to bet small. I thought maybe I could prevent him from free rolling with some, or not free rolling, but from getting a free card with, I guess just with non-nut lows, non-nut low draws. I thought that, you know, this might be enough to get him off of, although in retrospect, it seems like, you know, he must have something besides just ace four in his hand, or he wouldn't have bet the flop. So I don't think this bet really makes a lot of sense. I bet $2,850 into a pot of $9,500. I think you make a good case for shoving. Checking is kind of what I thought I should have done after reviewing this hand. The small bet doesn't seem very effective for anything.
Yeah, and it's just harder. Like, a lot of the hands that you're trying to fold out are just going to shrug and make pot odds calls, I think. Especially a lot of those hands are... Like the nut draws are disproportionately represented in those, and I think he's just going to call. So, and when you fold, I think you had him in bad shape.
Well, so now here's the really weird thing. So he makes a tiny check raise. He makes it 6,500. So I bet 2,850. He raises to 6,500.
That's weird.
Yeah.
So he's probably not bluffing. I think you have the nuts at least one way off and enough here that I don't think he has a profitable bluff, nor do I think the people really bluff this way. Like, it's possible he's doing some next level stuff, but especially in NL08, I don't really suspect that. So if you call, why are you calling? A, to get a free showdown. B, to call the river and to expect to be good often enough. C, to try to draw and to get there. D, some combination of the above. 4 high flushes can't improve. 4-3 lows can improve sometimes. You can make a full house sometimes. You've got 4 outs to that. Yeah, I guess you have to call. I do think there's a large... And I think we both criticize this sort of thinking in No Limit a lot, but in NL08, there is a pretty big... Lord knows what this person's betting habits are going to be. Like, whereas there are a lot of situations where the bets reliably beat the nuts, and now in No Limit, people are figuring out to bluff sometimes there. So whereas the bets are more reliable, sometimes the betting patterns are less predictable, and a bet on one street doesn't reliably indicate that the bet is coming on the next street. So given how big this pot is, I would call the extra 4.5 big blinds, expecting to fold the river at least sometimes, and hoping for a check. And checking behind, I think. Well, if he checks to you, yeah, you can get scooped sometimes. And I think he's probably not checking raising with like a second nut hand one way and a marginal hand the other way that would fold on the river. So I think I would, weak as it sounds, just check behind on the river if you call and get checked to on the river. Yeah, I would call and hope to go check on the river. And probably, this sounds weak, probably just fold to a jam on the river or fold to a big bet on the river.
Okay, yeah, so that is what I did. I called, the river was the 9 of hearts, making the final board 10-7-6-9-9, 3 spades. I'm holding 10-6-4-3, so I've got, there's no low possible. I have a 4-3 to make a flush, a pretty unimpressive flush. I don't know how likely the villain is to have boated up on the river after making that small check raise on the turn. I guess it's possible he has I don't know what worse hands he's like check raising on the turn that then boat up on the river. So I don't know how relevant it is that the board pairs on the river, but he did end up, he didn't quite jam. I know he did jam. Okay. So yeah, he jammed 16K into 22.5 and I did fold at that point.
Yeah, I think that's the thing to do. Like, you definitely folded equity here. The 4 high flush especially is good sometimes. I would say that your high is good sometimes here, but that's a little less likely to be true. Or your low is here sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you definitely have some of this pot sometimes, but you're almost never getting the whole thing, so I would fold.
There's no low. It's 10-7-6-9-9 is the board.
10-7-6-9. Oh, excuse me. Yeah, okay. So, right, so you would have to be bluffing. Yeah, excuse me. Boy. Yeah, all the more reason. I guess you could have. So now your hand looks a bit like a low draw, yes?
That was my concern. I think this is a line that you see in No Limit, that people will sort of like make. I mean, it's a very exploitive thing to do, but people will sometimes like make a small better raise and thinking that you're kind of capping your range by not raising them, and then kind of bomb the next straight. It's sort of a like repping the nuts range. If he thinks, for instance, that I'm kind of capped by betting small on the turn and then not raising the turn, then this is sort of a like rep the nuts to push your opponent off of an obviously non-nut hand sort of move.
Yeah, but I think it also makes his raise on the turn like it's easier to see that with like the nuts with some sort of low redraw.
Yeah.
So you block ace four and ace three of spades, but that leaves plenty of nut hands in his range. Yeah. Yeah, I think I would trust him and fold. I think you did fold away equity. I think your hand is good here sometimes, and I think. But see, here's the problem: is that it's No Limit, and if he's semi bluffing on the turn, you can just stick it in his face. I'm not sure I would choose this hand to call down with. You don't block a lot of the nuts, I don't think. I mean, now that the nine pair's on the river, you block 10-9 and well, mostly 10-9. So that matters, but you don't block all the 10-9. But is he value shoving a flush? So here's the reason to call. The reason to call is that if he had a value high hand on the turn, then he should be scared of this river, I think.
Right.
And so he can't really be betting for pure value two streets in a row. So what's going on? Well, what's going on is either that he had some sort of decent, either he's making a good value bet on the river, thinking that he's going to pay you off if you shove and will call with more hands than you will bet with. Boy, this is tough. This is tough. Or he had a really good, I mean, it's also like there's no law against getting dealt the nut flush and some full house cards here. Like those are all raising hands for the most part.
7-7 with A7 of spades.
Sure. Or he has like a naked nine that blocks a lot of the full houses. Like he could have the nut flush with a nine.
Yeah,
this is tough. The combinatorics gets just really ghastly in 08, especially these big bet games. Yeah, I'm confused. I think this is a tricky spot. I think ultimately it's not that hard to put him on a better hand than you. His line doesn't make a lot of sense with those hands, but it also doesn't make a lot of sense with hands that are worse than yours. I think I would trust him and fold, but I also think this is pretty goofy, and I really don't like your turn bet size.
Yeah, so. I think that's the major thing is I just shouldn't have made that bet on the turn. And I mean, he ended up doing a thing that in some sense took advantage of that. So, yeah. I did fold. So that's anticlimactic. I don't have results for you, but that's what it is.
Yeah. Nice hand. It's,
thank you.
It's funny. This reminds me of playing the 3K PL08 over the summer where I was playing like pretty differently from most of the people at the table. And this happened at least three times where I made some play. Everybody around me rolled their eyes and was like super condescending or transparently trying to like reassure the fish toward me. And I thought like, no, my play is good. Well, maybe all these famous players are saying that my play is bad. Maybe it was bad. Then I like on the break, I go to two dimes and think about it, talk to like the best players I know, do all the hot and cold equities. And like, it really reaffirms my play by a mile. So yeah. These big bet 08 games are still in the Stone Ages, I think. Which is not to say I'm some sort of wizard, but it felt a lot like playing Hold'em felt in 2007.
Nice. Well, thank you for your help. I'm kind of inclined to go get started on dinner. I think we've got
I've got a dog to walk, and I got dinner to make too. So let's do that. And thanks to our listeners for tolerating a slightly unusual episode. We'll be back to more standard episodes soon, I think.
Devotion of a car, the light of the fair passage of a bill.